You know, when a person enters the straits of life, the difficult areas of life, he is wonderfully blessed if he has friends upon whom he can count to the uttermost. When the Apostle Paul came near the end of his life, he was a prisoner in Rome because of the gospel. He knew that he would never be released from prison until he went out beyond the stars to be with Christ. He knew that he was going to die as a martyr. And the last letter that he wrote that you have in your New Testament is his second letter to Timothy. Now here is the apostle knowing that his life is not going to last much longer on the earth. And he had three friends, especially, that he could count on in those dark hours. One was the person that we see almost first and almost last in life, the doctor. And Dr. Luke, Paul says, was with him. Luke traveled with Paul a great deal and stayed with him in Rome, and it might have been because of health issues that Paul had. But Luke was there, and he could count on him. Another of his friends was the young preacher Timothy, the recipient of 2 Timothy. He had been converted by Paul and had traveled with Paul on his missionary journeys. And at one place in describing Timothy, Paul said, "I have no one who is like-minded as is Timothy." He said, "We're alike, and I can count on him to the uttermost." And maybe that's why in this last letter he said to Timothy, "Do your diligence to come to me shortly. Come to Rome because I want to see you and my days are numbered." And he went on to say, "Be sure you come before winter. Come before the seas are closed because I may not be here in the spring." So there was Luke the physician and there was Timothy the young preacher. And the third friend that Paul could count upon in those dark hours was the one who would be the friend of all of us. He is the one who said, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." And of course, that friend is the one who also said, "I will never leave you or forsake you." And that's Jesus Christ, our Lord. But in the years before Paul was imprisoned in Rome that last time, he had traveled more than 5,000 miles, either by foot or by beast of burden or by ship, throughout all the Mediterranean area, throughout that part of the Roman Empire, spreading the gospel of Christ. He went on three great missionary journeys. One took him into what is called Asia Minor. A second journey took him beyond the sea to Europe. And the third journey retraced many of the places he had visited on the first two of his journeys. And then finally, he went to Jerusalem. When Paul went to Jerusalem near the end of his career, he was on a special mission. He had traveled among the Gentile churches, gathering a contribution for the saints in Judea, including Jerusalem, that were suffering from a famine. His reasoning with the Gentile churches was this. He said, "Jerusalem shared with you spiritual blessing, the gospel. The gospel came out to you from Jerusalem. And now they're suffering physically, and it's fitting that you send physical things to meet those needs." And Paul probably had another motive for wanting to take that contribution. And that was he wanted to cement the Jewish and Gentile elements in the church. Because in the first century church, there was a real danger of there being a Jewish church and a Gentile church. And the Lord had never intended for it to be a divided church. Basically, the fear of division had come because Jewish Christians were wanting Gentiles to become Jews before they could become Christians. They wanted to bind on the Gentiles certain parts of the law of Moses. As a matter of fact, there was an important conference held in Jerusalem, as recorded in the 15th chapter of Acts, where the apostles and the elders of the church, and also Paul, who had become the great missionary, where all of them came together to consider what will be required of Gentiles before they can become Christians. And the conclusion was a correct conclusion. They're not required to keep the law of Moses. Christians are not under the law of Moses. Now, the Jewish converts who were now Christians could keep certain ceremonies as they pleased, but they were not binding any longer. And they could not bind those upon Gentile Christians. And so the Gentiles simply needed to obey the gospel. And they could be Christians and members of the church. And the need for cementing the Jewish and Gentile elements was part of Paul's ministry. And he thought that this contribution would help in that. And Paul, for whatever reasons, wanted to deliver the contribution himself. He was going to carry it literally from Europe over to Judea. And he didn't want anybody wondering if he were keeping some of the contribution for himself. And so he took certain brothers with him. It was to substantiate his honesty and his truthfulness. And they made the journey. Before they left Europe, Paul was warned that bad things might happen to him in Jerusalem, because Jewish people were there who had not been converted to Christ, and they remembered that he had been Saul of Tarsus, the persecutor, and now they knew that he was Paul, the apostle of Christ, a Christian. And he was warned that there might be trouble ahead for him. And sure enough, when he went to Jerusalem, he delivered the contribution. But the Jews in Jerusalem, who were unbelievers, were stirred up against him. And they literally would have torn him limb from limb had he not been rescued by the Roman garrison that was in Jerusalem. As a result of the Romans taking him into custody, they took him to the seat of their government, which was not in Jerusalem, but was up in Caesarea. And there he appealed his case before the Roman authorities, but he didn't get anywhere. And 2 full years passed, and there were governors that came and went, and he was still a prisoner. And so as a Roman citizen, he had the right to appeal his case to Caesar himself. And so Paul went as a prisoner to Rome to have his case tried. When he was in Rome this first time as a prisoner, he had his own rented house, and he was more like we would call under house arrest. He had a lot of freedom, and people came and went, and he received visitors, and he was free to preach the gospel. And the book of Acts ends with Paul being released, and he travels among the churches for a time. We learn from his letters that he soon was arrested again, back in Rome, and there he would not be released anymore, but would die as a martyr. Now, in all of his ministry that covered perhaps 30 years, and traveling those 5,000 miles, planting churches throughout the Roman Empire, Paul made many friends. As a matter of fact, believers wanted to be friends with Paul. The only problem that Paul faced from believers was when believers were misbehaving, and he corrected the problem. He did it gently, and he did it with love, but he corrected the problem. And he would say, as he did to the Galatians, "Am I become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" But Paul made many wonderful friends in so many places during his three missionary journeys and his two imprisonments in Rome. Now, when he was a prisoner in Rome the first time, as the book of Acts comes to a conclusion, during that imprisonment, he wrote four letters in your New Testament. He wrote Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. Those are called Paul's prison letters. In the book of Colossians, as Paul comes to the end of that little book that just has four chapters in it, he talked about his friends. Paul did not plant the church in Colossae. Paul had gone to Ephesus briefly on his second missionary journey, but he returned on his third journey and planted a very strong church there. And he stayed in Ephesus for 2 years. That's longer than he stayed any place, any one place. While he was there, he taught in a school. And he also taught in the Jewish synagogues, declaring that Jesus of Nazareth is the long-awaited Messiah. So in Ephesus, there is a strong church planted. But Paul's missionary method was that he didn't try to go to every town and every village and every city, but he went to major centers of population. And then he wanted the gospel to go out from those major centers, carried by disciples, to the smaller cities, to the villages, the hamlets, and it spread like when you throw a stone in a pond, the wave goes out from that even to the shore. Well, that's the way Paul did mission work. He preached the gospel in major centers, and it went out from there. Now, he planted the church in Ephesus, but there were other cities in the area. Colossae was one of them. Laodicea was another. We remember Laodicea was the recipient of one of the scathing letters that Jesus directed John to send at the end of the first century, recorded in Revelation chapters 2 and 3. There was another city called Hierapolis. And Paul did not plant churches in those smaller cities, but other disciples did. So when Paul wrote his letter to the Colossians, he had never visited the city. And he says, "You have not seen my face. I haven't been there personally, but I know about you. I've heard of your faith and your hope and your love, and I'm praying for you." And he went into some detail in the early part of the letter about what he was praying for the Colossians. And at the end of the letter, he did something that might be a little bit unusual in his New Testament letters. He had written the book of Colossians by dictating it, and it was written by a secretary. But when he came to the end of it, he signed it with his own hand. And he said to them, "I haven't seen you face to face, but I'm writing this last part with my own hand because I love you so very much." And in Colossians chapter 4, Paul deals with friendship. I want to look at the verses that we read together a few moments ago and make some observations about friendship. And the first thing that I want to do is I want to identify the people that Paul called his friends. Who are his friends in Colossae? Now, he has them scattered all over the Roman Empire, but he's going to specify some of them now. First of all, in verse 7, he introduces Tychicus. We don't know a great deal about this man, except what Paul tells us here. But it seems that Tychicus, and another man that we'll look at in a moment, delivered the letter to the Colossians. Remember, Paul's in prison. He's under house arrest in Rome. And so Tychicus is going to take the letter that Paul has written to the Colossians. But notice how he describes Tychicus. He said, he is a beloved brother. There have been several times in my ministry when I have had a special attachment to a brother. And those brothers became beloved brothers. Webb was one of those early in my career. Gene was another one. But through the years, I've had beloved brothers. And Paul says Tychicus was a beloved brother. But also, he was a faithful minister. We don't know much about his work, but Paul says he was faithful in it. And he said he's a fellow citizen, a fellow servant in the Lord. Paul looked upon himself as a bond servant of Jesus Christ. And he said Tychicus is a servant as well, a fellow servant in the Lord. And he said he will tell you all the news about me. So I'm assuming that Tychicus would tell the Colossians, Paul is in prison in Rome. He's not in a dungeon. He's in a rented house. He's preaching the gospel, which he loves to do. He receives visitors, and he has a great deal of freedom. Things are going well with Paul under the circumstances. He'll tell you all about me. And he said in verse 8, I'm sending him, Tychicus, to you for this very purpose, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. Paul said, I've heard about Colossae. I know something about the church there. And I'm sending Tychicus to give you encouragement, to build you up, to edify the church in Colossae. I'm sending him to you for this very purpose, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. I don't know much about Tychicus, but I like him, don't you? And then he said, second, with Onesimus. Now, that's an interesting one to me, because Onesimus had been a slave. You know the little letter to Philemon that's in your New Testament? One of the four letters Paul wrote during his first Roman imprisonment? It's a brief letter to Philemon, one chapter, and yet it dealt with a serious problem. Onesimus was the slave of Philemon. Philemon had become a Christian. Now, God never intended for one man to be the slave of another man. But the book of Philemon and other places in the New Testament show us how God dealt with a social evil, and he did not say, slaves, unite. He did not say, march against your masters, rebel, go to war. None of those things. But rather, if you're a slave, he said, and you become a Christian, you be a better slave. And if you're a slave owner, you treat your slaves with dignity. And if the slave owner and the slave will apply the principles of the gospel to their situation, with time, slavery would take care of itself, because the Christian slave owner would come to see it's not right for me to subject another man to myself. But Onesimus was a slave. He wasn't a Christian. Philemon is a Christian slave owner. But Onesimus stole from Philemon and ran away from home. There were two things wrong with that in that setting. One, he shouldn't have stolen, and two, he shouldn't have run away. Because the slave owner had complete control of the slave, and he was like his other property. If he wanted to, he could kill him in the Roman Empire. Onesimus had run away to Rome. He's a runaway slave who's stolen from his master. And somehow, he became acquainted with Paul while Paul is under house arrest. The result was that Onesimus was converted to Christ. Now there's a social problem. What do you do with a runaway thief when he becomes a Christian? Well, Paul thought Onesimus needs to go home. But to send him home was to place him under the sentence of death. So Paul wrote this little letter to Philemon. Paul had probably converted in Philemon. He's going to send Onesimus back. And he says in his letter to Philemon, I really would like to have kept Onesimus here with me. But because he's a runaway slave and because he's stolen from you, I've got to send him back. But he said, Philemon, I want you to accept him as a brother, not as a slave. And I want you to accept him like you would accept me if I came. And then we see a little bit of Paul's psychology. He said, Philemon, I'm not commanding you to do this, but I'm asking you to do it. And I want you to remember that you owe me your very life. Think that put any pressure on Philemon? You owe me because I taught you the gospel. And he said, I know, Philemon, that you will do what I ask you, and you will even do more than I say. And the letter closed. And we don't know the outcome of that. But we want to believe that Philemon did what Paul asked him, and we want to believe that Philemon even freed Onesimus. This I do know, that in Colossians chapter 4, Onesimus is back in Rome with Paul. So he must have been freed. And not only is Onesimus now a freed slave in the culture of Rome, but he is a freed servant of Jesus Christ because he's freed from his sin. And Paul said, Onesimus is here with me, and he is a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. We think that Philemon lived in Colossae, and Onesimus had been a slave there. He's one of you. He is from Colossae. And they will make known to you all things which are happening here. Here are two of Paul's closest friends. Now, after he introduces these two friends, he then sends greeting from brethren, other brethren who are with him. And it's interesting that he mentions six by name. The first three are divided from the other three in that three of them are Jews and three of them are Gentiles. It tells us the diversity of the churches of the first century. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter what your background was. What really mattered was to who do you belong. And whether one was a Jew or a Gentile, they all belonged to Jesus, and so they were brothers in the body of Christ. And Paul sends greeting from three Jewish brothers first, beginning in verse 10. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner. We have reason to believe that he might have been under arrest too. Aristarchus, if he was a prisoner, had been arrested because of the gospel. But he's my fellow prisoner, and he greets you. And then notice second, he says, with Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. Mark. What do you know about John Mark? Well, you know he's a nephew of Barnabas. But you also may know that he went on the first missionary journey with Paul and Barnabas. And they hadn't gone very far, and Mark left and went home. We don't know why he went home, but we know he did, and Paul didn't think he had a good reason. Because when Paul and Barnabas got ready to go on a second missionary journey, Barnabas said, Paul, let's take Mark with us, and Paul said no. He turned back the first time, not taking him. And contention arose between Paul and Barnabas, and it was so great that they decided they wouldn't work together anymore. And so Barnabas took John Mark and went in one direction, and we don't know any more about them. And Paul took another companion, Silas, and they would eventually go to Europe. Now notice this about Paul and Barnabas. They had a disagreement. They decided they wouldn't work together anymore. But they didn't despise each other. And they didn't try to destroy each other. We don't know all that Barnabas might have said after they decided they wouldn't work together. But we know that Paul mentions Barnabas in other places. And when he mentions Barnabas, he also does so, he does so in the highest of affection. They were able to work separately, but they still respected each other, and they still loved each other. And notice this. I find this to be quite interesting. He said, Mark, the cousin Barnabas, it's his nephew, actually. It's his sister's son. The Greek word here would be relative. Mark, the relative of Barnabas, about whom you received instructions. I don't know what Paul might have told them about John Mark. But Paul's still remembering. He turned back on that first journey. He said, Mark, about whom you received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. Now, Paul seems to say, you know, John Mark's not very dependable. And I'm hopeful he's going to come to see you, but I don't know whether he'll come or not. He turned back on the first missionary journey. But if he comes, I don't know if he'll come or not, but if he comes, welcome him. Now let a few years pass. And Paul's released from prison. He travels among the churches. Then he's arrested again, and he's back in Rome, and he's going to die. And he writes that second letter to Timothy. And he said, Timothy, I want you to come to Rome to see me. Don't wait too long because I don't know how long I'm going to live. But when you come, bring John Mark with you because he's profitable to me in the ministry. I love that. Old John Mark failed on that first journey. When Paul writes Colossians, he says, I don't know whether he'll come or not, but if he does. Finally, he says, bring John Mark. He's profitable to the ministry. Barnabas really turned out to be right about John Mark. But before Paul dies, he's all right with John Mark too. So he said, I'm sending greetings from Aristarchus and from Mark. And then he says in verse 11, and I'm sending greetings from Jesus who is called Justice. We don't know anything else about him, except he was with Paul when he wrote this letter. These are my only fellow workers for the kingdom of God who are of the circumcision, that is, who are Jews. And they have proved to be a comfort to me. It's a great compliment to them. And then he mentions three Gentiles who also send greetings. Epaphras, who is one of you, he was from Colossae, a bondservant of Christ. Every Christian is. Epaphras greets you, always laboring fervently for you in prayer. I don't know about a great deal about Epaphras, but I know he was a praying Christian, and it makes me appreciate him. He's always fervently praying for you at Colossae. He's from there. He knows you, and you're in his prayers. That you may, and this is what he prayed, that you may stand complete, perfect, and then the English translation uses the word complete in verse 12, which means fully assured. That you may be complete and fully assured in all the will of God. For I bear him, Epaphras, witness that he has a great zeal for you and those who are in Laodicea and those in Hierapolis. So Epaphras loved the church. didn't matter where it was, he loved it. And he loved the brothers in the church. And then in verse 14, he mentions a second Gentile by name, Luke, the beloved physician. Luke was with him at the very end. And Luke is here during the first Roman imprisonment. And Demas greets you. When Paul wrote his last letter, 2 Timothy, he said, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. Demas went back, turned away, became unfaithful. But as Paul writes Colossians, Demas is with him, and he sends greeting. And then in verse 15, greetings are sent to and from brethren. He said, greet the brethren who are in Laodicea, the next town to you. And Memphis, and there's a footnote in my Bible. Because it is not certain from the Greek text whether this name is Memphis or Nympha. And the difference is that Memphis is a masculine term and Nympha is a feminine term. So we're not sure whether Paul's talking about a brother in the church or a sister in the church. But he says, greet Memphis or Nympha and the church that is in his or her house. In those days, there were smaller congregations and they didn't really have church buildings. Church buildings are not mentioned in the New Testament. They are authorized because God said, and God's commandments give us the right to do whatever is necessary in obeying the commandments. So we can provide a place to meet. But the church was meeting in the house of this Christian. And so greet Memphis and the church that is in his house. And then there is a charge to a man whose name is Archippus. Now, this is verse 16. Now, when this epistle is read among you, see that it is also read in the church of the Laodiceans, and that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. Now, Paul had apparently written a letter to Laodicea that we don't have. The Holy Spirit of God did not seek to preserve that for us. But you take this letter, the one to Colossians, and have it read at Laodicea, and they have a letter from me. You have that read in your assembly as well. And then verse 17 says, and say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord, that you may fulfill it. Now, Archippus, based upon the book of Philemon, remember the slave owner, was probably the son of Philemon because of something Paul says in the introduction to the letter to Philemon. And Archippus has been encouraged to be a preacher. The other day, when Arlene and I were down in Canyon Lake, down near San Antonio for a meeting, we met a little boy who, is he now 11? Wasn't he 11 or something like that? We first met him 3 or 4 years ago when we were there in a meeting, so he was 6 or 7. A delightful little boy that has a really heart-rending background. His father didn't care anything about him, and his mother was killed in an accident. And this little boy, when we were there 4 years ago, was in the process of being adopted by his grandmother, who is a single woman. And she has as her helper her mother, which is this little boy's great-grandmother. And that little boy has such a delightful personality. Everybody in the church loves him, and he talks to adults as though he's an adult too. And he just caught our eye when we were there 4 years ago, and he's there now, and he's a bit grown up from what he was before. He was there at every one of the meetings, actively participates. Wonderful little boy. And when I got home, I wrote him a letter. And at the end of the letter, I said, I'm hopeful and I'm praying that one day you will preach the gospel. I don't know whether he will or not, but we need to encourage people to preach the gospel. I can remember when parents encouraged their kids to preach. My mentor, Batzel Barrett Baxter, would say that he was a preacher because of his mother. He said from the earliest remembrances in his life, he could remember his mother reading to him Bible stories from the Bible. And she would say over and over again, one day you'll be presenting these messages because you're going to become a preacher. And he did. And he not only became a preacher, he became, from our viewpoint at least, he became one of the greatest of preachers. But I hardly hear that happening anymore. We'd be glad for our kids to do most anything, but we don't want our boys to preach. But somebody will have to carry on the preaching of the gospel. And we need to encourage people to preach. And Paul is encouraging Archippus to preach. Now, let's leave that and talk for a minute about being a friend, and then I'll close. Paul says a number of things here about the kind of relationships that friends have. The first thing that becomes apparent is that Paul trusted his friends. Back there in verses 7 through 9, he said, I'm sending these two friends to you, and they're bringing the letter, and I know that I can trust them. A friend, somebody you can trust. You can open your heart to your friend and know that it will go no further. And you know that whatever you say to a friend, that he will accept it and he won't think less of you. There are people that if you foul up a single time, they don't want anything else to do with you. But a true friend will stick with you. Paul trusted his friends. Second, Paul prayed for his friends. He tells here that others are praying for them. But when he began the letter, he said among some of the first things to the Colossians, I'm praying for you. You're in my prayers. And he encouraged his friends. This whole letter is a letter of encouragement. And it ends with his encouraging Archippus to preach the gospel. He forgave his friends. Demas is going to forsake him. But John Mark forsook him and came back. And Paul would later say, he is profitable to me for the ministry. He would forgive. And then number five, Paul's loyal to his friends. They could count on him. Think of the greetings that he sent in this letter. And then six, a friend doesn't center upon himself. You know, there are friends that just sap the energy from you. They take and take and take, but they hardly ever give. And Paul was thinking of them, and he hardly remembered to mention at the very end of the letter, remember my chains. The rest of it was about somebody else, but remember my chains. And then the last thing is the greatest friend of all. What a friend we have in Jesus, we sing. All our griefs and pain to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Jesus is the one who said, you are my friends. If you do whatever I command you in becoming a Christian and living the Christian life, whatever I command you, you do that. And then there's this line in Isaiah that speaks of Abraham and says that Abraham was addressed by God as Abraham, my friend. Wouldn't you like to be a friend of God? Wouldn't you love to be a friend of Jesus? And wouldn't you like to be a friend to others in the church and give to the relationship rather than taking? Well, that's enough tonight about friends. If somebody here would like to respond to the friend that we can have in Jesus, you're invited. Let's stand and sing.